K-Mud Podcast presents.
Welcome to Mindful Mud. We're doing Mindful Mud here, and I'm your host Flavina Nickley. Okay, so let's dive in. So today's show is going to be about the Dharma Center here in Garberville. We are celebrating this year 50 years of Dharma Center. Yesterday we had a big, big, wonderful gathering at the center where we came together. We sat together for the morning, and then in the afternoon we had a celebration with food and music and storytelling, and it was just absolutely heartwarming. Many people coming together from the community to celebrate this. All right, so my guests today are here in the studio with me, Timothy Clark. And then on the phone is Ken Berman. Okay, both old-time Soham residents who moved away. You moved a little further than Ken did, Timothy. All right, yeah. Welcome. Ken, are you on the line?
Yeah. I'm calling you from Fortuna.
All right. City. Here we go. Fortuna's joining us. And then welcome.
It's only 45 minutes north there of Garberville.
That's right. Hi, Ken. Good morning.
Good morning.
And good morning, Tim.
Yeah, thank you for having me here.
Yeah.
You know, it's really funny. In my dictionary, you both have nicknames, because I got introduced to you both about 20 years ago when I came to this community. And Ken was introduced to me as Zen Ken. And Tim was introduced to me as Prayer Flag Timothy. Remember that name?
I've never heard that name. I mean, I know Prayer Flags very well, but I never heard myself referred that way.
I think that was Bill's nickname for you. Uh-huh. So for me, you're Prayer Flag Timothy.
That's appropriate.
So I think those two nicknames are already saying a lot about the two of you. I always have to smile about that. Yeah, and a lot of people, I think, know you, right, Ken, as Sen Ken?
Yes, they do.
All right.
I had a license plate on an old slant six Dodge that said Zen Ken on it.
You're kidding me.
And so everybody went, where'd that license plate go? You know, so I phased out of it, but I still go by Zen Ken, yes.
Excellent. Okay, before I'd like to hear more from the two of you, I'd like to let people who don't know about the center know a little bit what the center is about. So the Dharma Center, as we know it, is a room in the midst of Garberville on Maple Lane, upstairs from Plant Habit, in the old Redwood building there. And it has been alive and going since 50 years, which is amazing, really, 50 years. And it's a room that's just loaded by now with incredible energy of practices. There have been practices of meditation, yoga, dance, all kinds of awareness practices, Qigong, Tai Chi, just beautiful practices, all kinds of different traditions too coming together. There's a beautiful altar in it that you built, right, Tim?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there's sabutones, there's sofus, there's benches, there's everything you need to practice meditation. There's a kitchen, there's a bathroom. It's just an incredible, incredible place with a part of it, a beautiful hardwood floor, and part of it carpet. And it is available for rent. I'm just throwing that out there right now for classes and workshops. I'm currently the manager of it. Feel very honored to have that job. And, I think it's just really important to let the whole community know we have such a jewel right here in Southern Humboldt, where we can come together and practice. And it's really all-inclusive, right? It's as long as you are doing some kind of awareness practice or there have been parties in there, there have been gatherings in there, there have been red tents in there. There have been all kinds of beautiful things, book clubs. So anyway, I just wanted to let everybody know this is existing. And I'd like to hear from you now, Tim. Go ahead.
Are you trying? Oh,
okay.
Tim, not Ken. Okay.
Tim, that's right.
Tim.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you have basically been one of the founders of that center, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll give a little, just a real brief history.
Please, yes.
People that were there yesterday heard it all before, but basically we started, there was a Zen group that we used to meet at the Redwood Monastery on Saturdays, and just a group of us, maybe eight people, something like that. And then we ended up getting a place, one of the people got a place in Redway down on the river. And we practiced there, had a great big living room. And then when they, the landlord wanted that place back, we got this place in Garberville. That was in 1976, yeah, because we started off as a Zen group, and then some of us became Chogyam Trungpa students, Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism, a very well-known book came out that year. And a lot of us read that book, and we got converted to Tibetan Buddhism. I had sort of been interested in Tibetan Buddhism because I'd been to India and I met Tibetans. But actually, Zazen practice is pretty much even what I do now these days. I mean, it's the same thing. All the meditation practices are very, very similar. And so then we got this Dharma Center, and there were like 22 members, Chogyam Trungpa students. We became, it was called a Dharma Study Group. It was under the auspices of Vajradhatu, which is Trungpa's organization. And there were 22 of us to start with, and then we fixed that place up. And then very quickly, after a couple of years, a whole bunch of people left because they wanted to go to Boulder to study more, or to down to the city where the big centers were. And it was left in my hands. I was the only person left here. And I'm not really – I'm not like Florina. I'm not really I don't manage things really well, people and stuff. If people wanted to come, that was fine. I didn't really like teaching very much. I did a little bit of teaching, but I really appreciate the job that Florini's doing on it. It's so nice to see it being managed well.
Thank you.
But I was a Tibetan Buddhist practitioner, but my best friend Mickey Burkholder was a Zen guy, and he had his own little group, very very small group, meeting at Beginnings on Saturday mornings, and I was sitting in the Dharma Center on Monday evenings. And we were both sitting separate. And finally, I talked him into coming to the Dharma Center, and we made it more eclectic, and we brought in – basically we all sat together. And it just it sort of – I wouldn't say it struggled along. It was really nice. It was, small. We had maybe three or four people on Monday evenings, and sometimes we would do all-day sittings. So I did that for I don't know how many years. I mean, I think I left here in 2005. So from 1977 till 2005, I was pretty much the coordinator. We called it coordinator there, and made sure the rent was paid. I turned the two bedrooms that were in the back into offices, so that really helped pay the rent. So we weren't ever worried about financial problems, and it was very easy to run. And,
so you at this early time you didn't like rent it out to other classes or something?
No, not at first. And then Hal came along doing yoga classes, Baba Hal, and they became very popular. And he paid well for the rent, and we actually made it a little extra money. And I would send that over to India to help support the lamas over there. And then later on around 1988, maybe 89, I was a student of Lama Dawa Chodok. That's a sort of interesting story. I joined this pen pal program to help support lamas in India, Sanskrit University, to little young Tibetan lamas, and I just took a name off of the bulletin board and started writing to this young man and sending him money whenever I had a little extra. And for 17 years, we wrote back and forth. He got an Acharya degree from Sanskrit University, and then he went to live in caves up in the mountains with his father was a yogi, and he had all these great Tibetan meditation masters, you know, and so he learned from them. And so after 17 years, I finally had enough money and time to go over and visit him in India. And then for the next, well, that was maybe 1980, I think, 79 or 80. We just went back and forth. I would go over to Nepal in the wintertime, India and Nepal, and we would just travel around visiting different teachers. And then he would come over. I would spend maybe 3 or 4 months over there, and then he would come over here and live with me up in Bryceland for a few months a year. So we just went back and forth like that for many years. And he was my teacher all that time until he died in 2017. But anyway, when he came here, he started teaching classes at the Dharma Center.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty much the history. And I don't really know too much what happened after I left, but I guess
I can fill in that gap.
Yeah.
It's pretty much you left, what did you say, 2005?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I came here 2006. So we mm-hmm. kind of, yeah. And then I started teaching at the Dharma Center in 2008, I think. Yeah. Okay, Ken, what's your history? You came pretty early in the day towards the center too, right?
Yes. I'll give a short version of the Zen parallel to Tim. So there were sitting groups in Bryceland, and really I think Zen started at Redwoods Monastery down in Whitethorn. There was a contemplative tradition with the Catholic priest, and Thomas Merton actually did visit Humboldt County and Redwoods Monastery a long time ago. There's a book with photos in it that I have of he took of the Lost Coast, and number of people, mostly from Bryceland, sat at Redwoods Monastery in the early 70s. And I think it was started by this Robert Quayada, now Narcissus Quayada. He lives in Mexico now. He was connected to that, and I think he was the beginning of that. Then there were many sittings all in the hills. We had the Barndo up Elk Ridge, and then we sat at Beginnings. And so this small Zen group that kept it together. Then Tim, Mick Burkholder was a longtime student of Sasaki Roshi. And so Tim and Mick sat together, and then we formed a group more at the Dharma Center from then on. And Roland Potter joined us and various other people. So that was a really good thing. So I wanted more practice and left and practiced at the Bay Area and in Rhode Island with different Zen groups from, say, 83 to 90. And in 90, I returned to Humboldt County and for some reason felt empowered without any transmission. But I had the blessings of all my teachers and started I called it Zendo 101, and we sat at the Dharma Center it was a really great time. Also, I had developed the style, since I didn't have transmission, of just practice really hard, no lectures, no talking, no reading, just do the practice. That was my style. In general. However, I did invite up. And then what I found was, after living in Berkeley and the Bay Area, you come to Humboldt County and you can be a medium fish in a small pond. And you can do things and you're more on the map than you are in the Bay Area, where there's millions of people. So then I started this group, and I kept synthesizing it and narrowing it down. Okay, what's the style of this group? And I had a number of older students with me. They're very introverted people, so I won't mention their names. But and so we practiced there, and I invited guest teachers here and there. And I want to say the first one was Maylee Scott, who passed away, unfortunately. And she later formed the Arcata Zen Group. She was into forming the Arcata Zen Group up in Arcata. And the Arcata Zen Group actually has been going on since the early 70s through various teachers. And then I had a brief visit with Bob Paulson, a Zen priest who lived in Santa Cruz. And then we went through a period with Elihu Gemio Smith, who was a really dynamic teacher and a Soto Zen teacher who was very grilling and really had his trip together. And then the final teacher that is Jeff Kitsis from Empty Gate Sangha, and I became a member of that group, and he came up, and he often brought many people from the Bay Area to practice with him. So we really pumped up the energy. He did lots of interviews, and everybody liked him. So sometimes there was just myself and one person, myself and Florina, or myself and somebody who sat with me, and we pumped up the energy the best we can. And I was getting very discouraged, and I showed up, and everybody on my mailing list showed up on one day just when I was getting discouraged. And so that was really powerful. And then COVID happened, and most of my Florina's group were younger, and my group were in their 80s, and so everybody just retired. We ended it. So that was pretty much my story, but I still practice with Florina, and I want to add that the Dharma Center has a kitchen, a bathroom, and So it's a full facility where you could do a retreat there and use the facilities. So I am really grateful that it's been there, and I hope it continues on for another 50 years at least, and I will continue to practice there. End of story.
Thank you, Ken. That's quite a wrap-up you did there for the last, like, almost 50 years. All right.
Crammed it in.
You did. But really, being part of it almost 20 years now myself, it's definitely become a wonderful center. And it's also really, to me, really beautiful to share it with different people. Now we have a whole bunch of different groups in there doing different kinds of practices. I find this very inspiring, and at the same time, I have to come up with the rent and pay the bills as well. I mean, for most of us teachers, it's kind of a labor of love, right? Most of the classes are not that well visited, so. But we're keeping going because it's just, you know, for me at least, I can only talk really for me, but it keeps me going myself, right? Most teachers are encouraging us. It's like, teach and you will learn. Mm-hmm. I think that's important. And it's just such a beautiful, beautiful sanctuary that you've built, Tim. Really, I mean, I'm so grateful for you and all the other folks. So I know we had some yesterday at the party. You came up from the Bay Area, which was very special, but we also had a couple other, like Robin coming up and sharing a little bit the history. When did you like call it the Dharma Center from the beginning? It was kind of like almost an accident how it all
happened.
It
was called the Dharma Study Group because we were actually, it was sort of an official, it was one of the satellite centers for Chogyam Trungpa's organization. And then we dropped the study group and we just called it the Garberville Dharma Center. I mean, we became more eclectic. At one point, Lama Dawa and I were in Dharamsala and we visited the Dalai Lama and we asked him if he could, bless our center. And he gave us a name. He gave us a name of Thupten Choling, and he said that we should be an eclectic Buddhist center, that any Buddhists could use it, you know. And we shouldn't really limit it to one. And, so it became just a Dharma center. Yeah. I mean, we had, Ken was talking about the different Zen people that came there to teach. I mean, we brought quite a few. I don't know if I can even remember them all. It was Lama Wangdor and Chakdu Tulku came a couple of times. He has a center up in Junction City. Choken Nima came one time. I'm not sure who's come since then, but it seems like we had a lot of – there were a lot of teachers that came through there. And, quite active.
Yeah, and you can feel the energy in there for sure.
Yeah, well, the other interesting thing is you can – if you had seen it back in 1978 and you looked at it now, it's like just almost exactly the same. I mean, I have some pictures from 78 and some from 1990 and then some from today, from yesterday, and it looks like exactly the same place. And in fact, one of my favorite stories is that what Ava – one of the students there, she said that she left her Birkenstocks there one day, and 18 years later, they were still in the same place.
That's it. That's just, it. Yeah.
I mean, it's kept very clean, but it looks just exactly the same. And it was nice that we did a good job on it to start with. We had a lot of people working on it and some good carpenters and good seamstresses, you know, lots of cloth. And
it's beautiful. Yeah. I mean, the curtains are just a piece of art, too. And another thing I didn't mention, there is a library in there even. There's a whole bunch of bookshelves that are full with books from Zen to Tibetan Buddhism to all kinds of beautiful books. And people keep bringing books and people keep loaning books. And it's kind of like this open library that's been working ever since I've been there. And it's some people come to a class or so and then you're like, oh, this book, I almost bought it and now I find it here. It's like, it's great. It's quite a good collection of books in there.
Yeah.
And you know, I just want to also give a shout out to everybody who came yesterday to the celebration. It was just so special hearing just people share the stories and then also realizing that all our teachers in a way kind of lead to Thomas Merton at the monastery. How amazing is that?
Yeah.
Even my Zen teacher, Willikes Jäger, right? Uh-huh. A German, actually Catholic priest and Zen teacher. He's closely connected to the Redwoods Monastery too. Mm-hmm. So some of these nuns have been sitting with him up in Portland. And just kind of seeing how it's all interconnected is so meaningful to me. And yes, as you said before, right, Tim, it's like this – in the end, the practice is the same, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, it has many different names and many different traditions, and that's all beautiful to celebrate. At the same time, I think when we really put our heart in, what is the question, right? Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we all have Buddha nature, you know?
We all have Buddha nature.
And Buddha nature is the same. It's the same for everyone, so that's what connects us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Tell me more about the Buddha nature. How would you – like somebody has no idea what you're talking about.
Well, I mean, I don't know how good I can explain it. But, you know, the way I feel – I was just reading something the other day. It really struck me. And they were talking about Buddha nature and how we all have this awareness, you know, it's our nature, our true nature of mind. And it's covered up. It's not something that we have to get, but it's something that's covered up by all the other – you know, stuff that goes on, all our thoughts. And so actually the practice of meditation in the Buddhist tradition is to get beyond the thoughts, beyond the concepts, and just realize that innate nature that we have, which is basically – it's got three aspects are emptiness – meaning that if you look at if you try to find your mind, you can't find it. It's, you know, it like exists, but it's nowhere. So that's its essence. Its nature is it's cognitive. It's you know, it's luminous. So we have, it's what makes us able to think, but it's what makes us experience. You know, so we have it's empty, but yet it experiences. You know, so it's got cognizance, and the third aspect is it's got a ultimate capacity to manifest all things, and it's compassion. You know, that's so. Those are the three aspects of your of the nature of mind.
I like how you say we all have Buddha nature. We all have that true nature in us. Obviously, I mean, sometimes it's not obvious, but and I think all of the practices are a way of just peeling that onion, right? Of letting go of all those concepts over and over again, the things, the beliefs, the ideas, the trainings we had, the layers that have been put on top of that luminous, transcendent, beautiful just being and presence. And just to when we become still and when we make space for that to shine, then we can start to get a glimpse of it first and eventually to see the layers for what they are, right? And that's really the practice. And all the practices, in my view, if they're really the practices, are doing exactly that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's an illusion.
Yeah.
Ken, I want to hear your Zen mind on that one. What's Buddha nature?
Talking to you on the telephone.
There you go. There you go. Here we got a Zen answer from Zen Ken.
And yeah, simple and here in the moment.
That's it.
Basically, the practice.
All right. We're already at the...
Don't make it complicated.
No, exactly. Because again, right, the spiritual practice to me needs to lead into everyday life. And this is, it's an important part. And we all can add more of that awareness, more of that opening into that Buddha nature that we just talked about through simple, as Ken just said, being on the phone with somebody. Can we be present here in the studio, right, with each other? We're present with each other. That's all that matters. And then, yeah, we're babbling a little bit and we're saying a couple words here and there, hoping to touch you out there who's listening. But it's really all a mystery. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. Sweet. I love it. So, yeah, were you, like, when you started the Dharma Center, Tim, did you have an idea that we're going 50 years?
No.
Right?
No.
Did you have a certain vision or that it was just like one day at a time?
It was, yeah, more one day, well, 1 month at a time. We had to, you know, to come up with the rent, you know. So, no, I never really thought about that. It was mostly, you know, it was, we were all interested in, you know, studying Buddha Dharma. And so, and we had a nice space to do that. I mean, at one point we had couches in there. It was really nice. We had a coffee table and every week we'd come together and meditate for like a half an hour, 40 minutes. And then we would have a discussion. We would read something. We usually study some text and discuss it. And, yeah, and it was just because, you know, we lived in out the hills, different places. It was time place we could come together. And I see, you know, now I drive through, and I don't come to Garberville. I come to Garberville maybe, or Southern Humboldt maybe twice a year, something like that. And I see the big changes that are happening, and all the stores are closed, and I'm going, what's going on here? But it seems like a really good opportunity for people. It doesn't look to me like people have a whole lot to do. And it's a great time as we get older, you know, to start thinking about these things and practicing, you know, learning some kind of meditation and thinking about what happens after this life, you know, studying that sort of thing. It's something that's always interested me since I was a child. You know, what are we doing here? You know, and I remember asking Lama Dawa one time the traditional question, what's the purpose of life?
Mm-hmm.
And he said the purpose of life is to attain enlightenment or to die, whichever comes first.
Yeah. All right, now you heard the secret, you all.
Yeah, that's the purpose of life. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, I thought about when I was in college, I was thinking, you know, I could be anything I want. You know, here I am, a white guy, college education, I can make money, I can do whatever I want. I thought, well, what's the most important thing? I thought, well, the most important thing has to go beyond death, you know, because this life is only, you know, 60, 70, 80 years.
It's a blink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's got to be, you know, and maybe, not, you know, we can't know for sure what happens, but it makes sense to me that it goes on. I mean, now with quantum, they're studying in quantum physics, what they're coming up with is the whole thing is conscious. And the material world doesn't produce consciousness. Consciousness produces the material world. So that's the basis is consciousness. And, you know, so that's what – And so that goes on. After you die, the consciousness, there is some consciousness that goes on, the awareness. And the awareness that goes on is that innate, pristine awareness. And it just sort of peeks out through different perspectives. Each person has a different perspective, but it's the same awareness, you know, experiencing, you know, through that filter of the, you know, of the person's, you know, your incarnation.
That's nicely said. Yeah. And ultimately, it's just one awareness.
Just one awareness.
It's one awareness. And we have the little, like our little personality and how we get through there. Yeah. And when we start practicing and that becomes more and more experienced, life changes so absolutely, right? And then you're like, why have I like why have I lived through this filter all my life, right?
Yeah.
So question for both of you. What is enlightenment? You mentioned enlightenment, and I was, no, a lot of people have a lot of opinion about this word. So I'm kind of curious to hear from you, Tim, and then from you, Ken, as well.
Yeah, well, it's the realization of that innate awareness, of that pristine awareness. Realization, it's there all the time, and that's what allows us to see the world. It's the awareness that allows us to experience. And so knowing the unfiltered, pure awareness is enlightenment.
And you see it as a goal to achieve, that one time enlightened, always enlightened? How do you feel about that?
No, that's kind of a tricky question, because it the only way you can really experience this, you can't experience it through effort. You know, I mean, it takes some effort to get involved in it, but really to actually experience it, you have to let go of everything, let go of all the effort. We call it non-meditation in a way.
And that is the hardest part, right?
Yeah.
Because even meditation, there can be so much effort in it.
Yeah.
And we have to first realize that, you know, that radical letting go is very, very scary for the little me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ken, what's your answer? What's enlightenment?
Well, I agree with Tim. I think that I think practice is more important than enlightenment. And originally, we're all interested in enlightenment and having some special experience. And then you realize the special experience is happening in the moment with whatever we're doing. And then we focus more on that instead of trying to make enlightenment. So we said in Korean Zen, don't make anything and don't make enlightenment. And so I think the practice, whatever happens naturally, and when you're open to it. And I agree with Tim that there is an incredible amount of effort in the beginning. And then as the effort changes into just being in the moment, then there you are. So
we
can't define it very easily. I do want to say that I had my own spiritual perspectives show in 1990 and maybe 91, and I did a number of things that you're doing exactly, Florina. I had roundtables with people who aren't around anymore. I was the head of the spiritual perspectives circuit, and we had meetings, and then I would invite everybody and we would have a round table, and I would come up with questions: what is enlightenment, what is God, and everything. And we would do this round table from all the people in spiritual perspectives from that week. And then I have it on cassette tape somewhere. I appreciate, the question. That's my answer.
That's a trip. You know, I've never asked that any guest what's enlightenment, because I think it can be such a confusing question, and at the same time, I do think it's a little provocative. I'm completely aware, but I do think it's an important one, because there is so much confusion about it. But then it can also create more confusion to talk about it. So here we go. The confusion is in the air.
Yes, yes.
And I think it's just part of this is why sitting and becoming still and going within and really checking out what is this thing that sits here is where it's at. And then just going deeper and deeper and letting deeper and deeper go and not, you know, you can't make enlightenment. You can't read enlightenment. You can't. Any of that is a complete illusion, right? But the mind likes to be involved. It's, we know that, right? So we
if you think that you're enlightened right now, it will change in an hour or a day, you know, or whatever. And so it's deluded to think that, well, I got enlightenment, because you won't. I guarantee you. It's surely after you think that.
So this is really interesting, because I just found out that so you have a connection with Kmart Ken, and then you, Timothy, you do too, in two folds.
Yeah, I mean, I had a program, I don't know, for a couple of years, Saturday mornings, and it was when Kmart was in the southern end of Garberville in these little cabins.
Very early days.
Yeah, so yeah, I had a thing. Mostly I played tapes of, you know, it was before they had CDs or anything, and I had tapes of different Zen teachers, and it was sort of like New Dimensions kind of thing, you know. And I didn't do much talking myself; I mostly played tapes. But yeah, that was my contribution. And then when Kmart bought this property here in Redway, I'm an architect, and I was doing I did the first. Design of the studios. I mean, the studio we're sitting in looks sort of similar to what I designed, except I remember the back wall I didn't have parallel to the front wall. But well, because I had to study it in order to do that. It was the first. It was the first sound studio I ever designed, and I had to study it. And they talked about how you had to have non-parallel walls and you know, certain kinds of glass that wouldn't let the sound through. And yeah, I learned a lot about that. I've done a couple of a studio for Lee Bostro at his place, and I've done a few music studios. And, yeah.
That's so fascinating. That's amazing. I didn't know that you designed this. That you had your fingers.
Yeah,
in
I mean,
this.
You know, that my career has been mostly. I have two careers. One is architecture. You know, I was fortunate enough to be. Graduated from architecture school. I went to Berkeley. And then when I came up here, I hadn't really planned to be an architect, but everybody was building houses. You know, it was back to the land. And I had a little bit of skill, not much, but, you know, I was able to help people. And I did some carpentry and design things. And eventually I did the Bateel Community Center and, you know, some
– Yeah, you build a lot of things around here.
A lot of things. Really? Yeah, a lot of – I always tell my friends down in the Bay Area, I designed palaces for rich hippies.
And I bet that was fun, because when people had money, you can do all kinds of fun things.
Yeah, we're very creative. And, I mean, I would say probably 70-80% of the buildings I designed never got built. They were literally pipe dreams.
Oh, really?
But, yeah.
Well, I hope you got paid anyway. Yeah.
And then the other thing I did was, which was more connected to my spiritual practice, was I got involved with the prayer flag tradition, Tibetan prayer flag tradition, through Lama Dawa. He sent me a prayer flag in maybe 1971. And I went, oh, these are really nice. I could learn to make prayer flags because of my architecture background, my drafting background. I'm very good at copying things. And so I learned silkscreen, and I started printing my own prayer flags. And eventually I got a studio in Kathmandu where we make we print flags and sew them. And then I also have a studio down in the Bay Area where we print flags. And prayerflags.com, you know, check it out.
It's incredible. Your work is – I mean, there's so many beautiful pieces too at the Dharma Center.
So, I mean, it's my website, prayerflags.com, has a lot of information about – you can learn a lot about Tibetan iconography and actually the whole Tibetan tradition and Buddhism. And so over the years, I mean, I've had that for – I've been making prayer flags since 1975.
See, prayer flag Timothy is the right name for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow, fascinating. So people can order prayer flags on your website?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. You do temple design too, right?
I do. I've done some temples, yeah. Actually, my architecture business is called Home and Temple, and homeandtemple.com. I have that website.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. So you are listening to Mindful Mud. I'm here with Timothy Clark in the studios, and Ken Berman is on the phone. And I'd like to open the phone lines. If you have perhaps experience in the Dharma Center yourself, you have stories, please call us here at the studio. Dennis will put you on the air, 707-923-3911. Or perhaps you have a question about the Dharma Center. We're happy to answer them. Again, I'm Florina. I'm actually the manager right now, or how did you guys? The coordinator?
Coordinator,
I like that actually
it, yeah.
Better. Yeah. The coordinator right now of the Dharma Center. So if you're interested in like putting on a class or an event or even just looking at the place, you're welcome to let me know. My number is 707-223-2005. And you can get in touch with me if you would like to see it. Again, there's a kitchen, there's a bathroom, there's a big, big room for practicing like yoga, dancing, meditation practices. I've taught even mindfulness courses in there, mindful parenting courses, all kinds of different practices, Tai Chi, Qigong, there's a Bagua. Perhaps I give out quick the schedule if I have it right in my head. What's going on right now at the Dharma Center. So weekly we have Tuesday mornings we have Nari teaching Hatha Yoga, which is a beautiful, beautiful class, 10:30 to 12. Then we have Wednesday evening I have my meditation class. That's from 5 to 6:30. It's every Wednesday. That's been almost a 20-year anniversary for that class. That would be that one is also available on Zoom, so you can get more information of that for that class on Wednesday night on essenceoflifesangha.com. And then there is Thursday mornings another Hatha Yoga with Nari. And then Thursday afternoon, there's dance with Janice. And Thursday nights, now we have Tai Chi, brand new class, 5 to 6:30. We're often on the square, though. I teach that one. And then Friday mornings, there's a Qigong class. Then we're also in the park a lot, so if you're interested in Qigong, you have to kind of let me know first so I can let you know where it is. So Qigong class Friday mornings is 10:30 to 12. And then what else do we have? We have like about every other month or so, we have a Zen retreat, just a one day. That's normally on Sundays by announcement. And then we have healing circles on Friday night once a month with Tanya Crawford, and we have every I think second Tuesday of the month, don't quote me, Tony Khalife, who was playing music yesterday, so beautiful, thank you Tony. He's teaching Bagua class once a month in the morning on Tuesday morning, so that's kind of what's happening. And again, so there's a lot of opening times too, especially on Mondays, not much going on, so that you can put a class on if you like. Okay, I think we have a caller. Sorry, caller, you had to be patient. Go ahead.
Okay.
Good morning.
I'm so glad to hear that you have so many good classes going on. This is Shirley Gray calling, and I was so, so sorry that I could not make it to the celebration yesterday. I'm just recently out of the hospital and not up to strength yet. So,
Shirley, welcome. Thank you for calling in. This is such a treat.
I was really looking forward to connecting with Ken. And Tim, I was sort of, when Tim left town, we had a study group going on Tuesday nights that had gone on, very eclectic reading and discussing and meditating. And Tim asked me if I would take over managing the place, which in my style of managing was very similar to his, which was collect a couple of rents, get the bills paid, and pretty much, you know, hands off. And I did that for about, I think, maybe 5 or 6 years before I asked Florina to take over. Thank you so much, Florina, for your very active and very, leadership style of managing the Dharma Center. it was during, you know, COVID came along, and our group eventually, our Tuesday group, which had been going in various locations for, oh my gosh, probably a decade, finally we ended up going online. And so, you know, because we weren't getting together at the Dharma Center during COVID. But I just wanted to say I love the place. I love what's going on there. I really feel honored that I was able to manage it in my own way for a few years. And I guess that's all. So
thank you, Shirley. I'm so grateful. First of all, you call in, and really grateful for your dedication to the center and your management. I thought it was way longer than a few years, but hey, my memory is probably wrong.
Yeah, mine is. I don't think it was less than 10.
Okay.
I remember, you know, collecting the rents from the various groups. Nari's been there longer than I have.
Right.
You know, and you know, just paying the bills and stuff like that. Talking to Chris, the landlord, trying to get things fixed. And yeah, it was a privilege. I just felt like I didn't have the energy to do it as well as I knew that you could do it, Florina. So thank you all. Good to hear your voices. Good to hear.
Yeah, I'm sorry you couldn't make it yesterday, Shirley.
50 years later. Thanks.
Yeah. Yes.
Thanks, yeah.
Thank you, Shirley. That's really sweet that you're calling in, because, you know, you were there in spirit yesterday for sure, and really, really glad that you're calling in, because it's a group endeavor, right, to keep this going. We're such a small community. Again, the classes are small. It's a big deal to make anything happen in this town. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it's a big deal to have a sacred place like this.
Yeah.
I think it's so important to nurture places like this, especially the more we go into feeling lonely and separation. And as you said, like, I don't know how I would be alive without a spiritual practice. There was just no way.
Mm-hmm.
and how I would, like, be happy in this crazy, crazy, crazy world, right?
Yeah.
I lean heavily into my practice for the joy of life. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Some equanimity, please.
Yeah, we have to find it in us, man. We can't count on the world.
Yeah.
Yes. So, and well, also a shout.
Good to hear you all, and good to hear, you know, I'm just pleased for the center that's going so strong.
Thank you so much. You are a big part of this, Shirley. And also here, I'd like to shout out to Nari. Nari has been an incredible support to the center. She always knows how to fix the heater and how to do the heating programming and all of the, you know, the little things that are important to keep a center going. And so huge shout out to Nori, and she keeps that place just so clean and so, so good energetically. So, and her dedication for showing up twice a week to teach her incredible yoga class is just beautiful, beautiful to see. So huge shout out to Nori too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to thank Chris Brannon too for making that space available. I mean, I don't know too much about, you know, the finances of the place or anything, but I know he was really good when I was there. I mean, of course, he was making, you know, he was able to make money on his other real estate investments, but he did, I don't think he made anything from us. And it was like, he did it just out of kindness, I think.
Yeah, so, that we still have that place. I mean, you know, that's huge.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. Thank you, Chris. Mm-hmm. Yeah. it's just such and just the Redwood itself, right? I mean, it's an old Redwood building. If you don't know that building, it's just an incredible place. And that itself brings so much warmth and beauty into that center. I think, you know, thank you to the Redwoods.
Yeah.
Ken, do you have something to add here? Do we lose him? Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Ken, for joining us until now. I hope you're well, and thanks for your inputs and your wisdom, your sharing, and also your dedication to the center. Ken came down once a month for many, many years to do a Zazen Kai, as I would call it, just a day retreat. And then when he stopped, I took that on. And I don't make it every month, but we do some, depending how many people mm-hmm. are interested, we have about, again, about probably every other month we have a day long.
Do you have the schedule posted somewhere?
Yes. So the schedule is posted on some bulletin boards. It's also online. No, it's not online. Wrong. I don't have a website for the Dharma Center. So if anybody's listening out there who would like to create a website for the Dharma Center, please feel welcome. Contact me. I have already two websites that I'm managing, so I don't need a third one. But I would do it if somebody creates a simple one. But yes, people can find the schedule hanging on bulletin boards. I do post it sometimes on Facebook and social media. And of course, you can always contact me if you'd like to know the schedule, if you get phone numbers of the teachers, you know what's going on. And also, obviously, if you do like to perhaps feel inspired to teach a class, either some kind of meditation or movement class. Again, it's really a sanctuary, and we're so fortunate to have it. And I really hope we can keep it going.
This is Ken saying, I do too.
Oh, you're back. Look at you.
Yeah, I hung up for a while. I didn't realize you had other lines coming in and all the, you know, I'm not very tech. So anyway, I echo what you say, Florina, and I'm really glad Shirley called in, and that really completes the cycle there. And the Dharma Center used to be the Redwood Record Building. There used to be a newspaper, I think, downstairs also. So there is an old history of that building. And so anyway, congratulations, Dharma Center, on the 50th anniversary and all the people who came through and who are presently involved. And I'm signing off. Thank you.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Ken. Yeah.
See you, Ken. Nice see
you.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. I'll see you in El Cerrito.
All right.
There you go. Yeah. All right, again, bye. Many thanks to so many people. If I forgot some people to mention here, what are your last words? Or perhaps you have a vision now for the Dharma Center?
Well, you know, I was just thinking about, I mean, the Dharma Center, you know, it's an entity. It's a place. And we sort of, you know, we're sort of coming through it. We don't know what's going to happen in the future. But that place has a life of its own. And I feel privileged to have been able to, you know, to have some experience in it, you know, and be able to help it along. And it's so interesting to see how it just keeps going. And I think as long as as long as that building is there and we have a landlord that's, you know, that's amenable to us, I think it'll keep going. There'll always be some spiritual practice going on here in Southern Humboldt. I mean, it's a very spiritual place, I think, you know.
It is, yeah. And it was just so sweet yesterday at the celebration in the morning when we sat from 9 to 12 to see how many different traditions came together mm-hmm. and how we had actually a full house, right? I think we were 18 people sitting in the morning from different traditions, and it was just very, very healing. Mm-hmm. And as you said, yes, the Dharma Center is its own thing. I like to say, like, there's a deity in there that really manages it. It's not me. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting which classes don't exist in there and which are. Mm-hmm. It keeps it very, very clean all by itself. Yeah, that's my feeling. Thank you, Tim, for being here with me. Thank you for coming off for the celebration. Thank you for inspiring me to do the celebration. Thank you for starting the whole thing up. Just really, really grateful for you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you for
your... All right, you all, if you are want more information on the Dharma Center, 707-223-2005, may there be peace.
This has been a KMUD podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.